जय राधा माधव कुंजबिहारी कोपजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंजबिहारी कोपजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरवन चारी रावण जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी कोपजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोर नंदन व्रज जन रंजन चामुंडा तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी कोपजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंजा बिहारी कोपजना वल्लभ गिरिवर Krishna. So this evening we're going to be looking at a verse from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's instruction to Arjuna, and a book which is really sort of the ABCs of spiritual life. And of course you know from your experience as students, ABCs provide the basis for everything that follows in one's education. So Bhagavad Gita is like that as well. Whatever the basic tenets are, both in terms of where we are right now in our pursuit for spiritual life, as well as the tremendous accomplishments we can make in our spiritual life are all contained in the ABCs of the spiritual science. So that's Bhagavad Gita. And we're going to be talking about a verse that's in chapter 6, text number 21. I don't know if we can put it up there, but if not, I'll just read it. It's about a subject matter that I hope you'll all be interested in. Does anybody here not want to be happy? Raise your hand. Anybody not want to be happy? Okay, good. That's a qualification for you sitting in this class here today, because if you want to be happy, then some good news for you is that's actually a spiritual desire. Did you ever think of it like that? That wanting to be happy, having a desire to be happy, is actually a spiritual desire. Because that's the nature of the soul, the real me, the real you, the soul, spiritual spark within the body. The nature of that spiritual spark is to be happy. In Sanskrit, it's anandamaya abhyasat. It's ananda, happiness, pleasure. Seeking that is natural. It's because it's our real self. Unfortunately, although no one raised their hand to say that they want to be unhappy, we'll do a little survey of the world and we'll find out how many people are happy. No one wants to be unhappy, but are people actually happy? That's the question. Anyway, so we'll start with this verse. That's text number 21. Sukham ajantikam yattat buri grayam anti buri grayam antindrayam veti yatra na chayvayam Titascha latitatvata Sukham ajantikam yatat Buddhi grayam atendriyam Veti yatra na chayvayam Titascha latitatvata So the translation of this verse. In that joyous state, samadhi, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. So that's the standard of happiness. Boundless happiness. But what is the happiness that we experience in this world? It'll stay. Okay. Don't we all have issues? The microphone has issues. So Srila Prabhupada makes a challenge, and I'm basing what I'm speaking tonight on a small introductory book that Srila Prabhupada wrote called On the Way to Krishna. And it's a description in there about happiness. And so we'll make a few comments and read from that book a little bit to try to understand this subject of happiness. And why it is that although all of us want happiness, we don't see it. And indeed, that's where Srila Prabhupada starts with his commentary built around this verse that we chanted today. He says, every one of us is searching after happiness, but we do not know what real happiness is. We see so much advertised about happiness, but practically speaking, we see so few happy people. Now, I think that maybe all of you have had the experience, I certainly have, of traveling to major cities around the world. And if you walk on the streets of those cities, and personally, I've been all the way from Auckland, New Zealand, to Kiev, Ukraine, New York City, Tokyo, Hong Kong, all over the world. And it's the same experience every time. If you walk on the street and you look at people's faces, how many people are smiling or giving some indication of feeling happy? Virtually no one. If you walk on the streets in India even, in the major cities in India, there's a lot more people that walk on the street there than in maybe other cities around the world. Hundreds of thousands of people, and you don't see a smile on anyone's face. Literally, there's no one smiling. There's no indication of that people are happy. So, how then are we going to achieve happiness? I'd like some suggestions from all of you. How are we going to become happy? Serve Krishna. To see Steve is making, you know, such... Michael. You got it wrong. Michael. From Tampa, right? Sarasota. No wonder people aren't happy. Okay, Michael from Sarasota has got the key, yes. That's how to become happy. But what do other people think, and what do other people endeavor for that they think will make them happy? To serve themselves, right? With money. Food, eating food, other things. All the pleasures they can achieve. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. How people try to be happy. Altruism. Altruism, okay. More subtle kind of happiness, the same thing. What's the problem with all those things? Why don't they make people temporary? Oh, Mahananda. Temporary, yes. These things are all attempts to be happy with, in relation to this body. In relation to this body. And this body is temporary. So even if we struggle very hard, we get a lot of money, we have all kinds of material facilities, still people are unhappy. Because the essential part of happiness, they're missing. They're thinking that, just like the examples given of a fish, if you take a fish out of water and give the fish all kinds of luxury, big cigar, soft beds to lie on, is that fish going to be satisfied or happy?
What about a yacht?
A yacht? What about the fish? What about the fishing boat? Is it going to be happy then? No matter what you do, you'll not be able to satisfy a fish unless you put the fish back in water, because that's his nature. That's where he'll find his happiness. So same thing is there with all of us. We are eternal beings. We have an existence before this body. We'll have an existence beyond this body. We're eternal. That's our nature. It's like the fish has a nature to be in water. And if we do not strive for happiness on that level, there's virtually nothing we can do to become happy because of the temporary nature of this body. So Prabhupada tells a little story in this regard in that book, On the Way to Krishna. And I'll just read it to you. It's interesting. He says, one has to be somewhat intelligent to understand this. This means what I've just explained. For a foolish man who cannot understand what real happiness is seeks happiness in this material world. In India, there is a story of a man who did not know what sugar cane was and was told that it was very sweet to chew. "Oh, what does it look like?" he asked. "It looks like a bamboo rod," someone said. So the foolish man began to chew all kinds of bamboo rods. How can he begin to experience the sweetness of sugar cane? Similarly, we are trying to get happiness and pleasure, but we are trying for them by chewing this material body. Therefore, there is no happiness and no pleasure. There is no happiness and no pleasure. Does anybody want to challenge that? I mean, I can understand it. You know, sometimes Hare Krishna devotees go different places and they're presenting Krishna consciousness. They make a statement like that. There's no happiness. There's no pleasure. And you know, people might question that. I mean, really? No happiness, no pleasure? Okay, there's one challenger. Anybody else want to challenge this? No, we're talking about materialists now. We're talking about devotees. Yes, Mananda.
Later on, it turns to misery.
Okay.
And the thing about it being temporary, I mean, no matter what pleasure you have in this world, no matter what child you're enjoying or girlfriend or parent, they're all going to one day, they're going to be gone. And then this so-called pleasure and happiness that you got from them, the other part will come, the pain and the separation and, you know, like that.
Okay. So, Mananda Guru is telling us the temporary nation. I heard somebody over here said they want to challenge it? Yes, it was Rupa.
Yes. The experience of love, even it may be a shadow, it may be very small in this world, it's very real. When a mother's holding her newborn child, when two people are in love. I mean, it's real. So, at least it appears real. So, I would say that for you to say there's no happiness in this world, that's very, you know, insensitive of you.
Okay. That's a challenge, yes. And it's a good challenge because it points to the crux of what we're trying to say here is that is real pleasure something that is temporary, or is real pleasure, real happiness, something that endures? We as living beings are eternal, and we want eternal pleasure. Okay, that's right, I'll take it off and hold it in my hand. Okay.
That's a challenge.
The happiness we perceive may be real, but it's temporary. Therefore, it's not real happiness. Real happiness has to match with our nature. And our nature is not temporary. It's not a temporary existence. It's a permanent existence. And so we want happiness to match that. Prabhupada, on the way to Krishna, describes here, for the time being, there may be some little feeling of pleasure, but that is not actual pleasure, for it is temporary. Is like a show of lightning, which we see flashing in the sky, that may momentarily seem like lightning, but the real lightning is beyond that. Because a person does not really know what happiness is, he deviates from real happiness. The problem with happiness as experienced in this world on a temporary nature is that it makes us, it's so much part of our nature that we seek it and crave it so much that we're willing to settle for a flickering happiness and not take the trouble. And it's not that much trouble, but not take the trouble to strive for eternal happiness. In our conditioned nature, we are just like Pavlov's dog. They ring the bell, and whatever little pleasure we get, we're satisfied with that, and we go back in our little hut waiting for the next time the bell to ring. There's more to life than that. There's more to happiness than that. And that's one of the basic premises of Bhagavad Gita that I was speaking about in the beginning. We should understand this ABC foundation of happiness being our right, our birthright, our nature. Permanent happiness, and we should seek that out and not be satisfied with flickering happiness. Prabhupada, on the way to Krishna, talking about happiness, analyzes different levels of happiness to come to this conclusion or to investigate what is real happiness. He gives the example like of a stone. For a stone, there's no happiness or distress because the stone is senseless. It's a material inert object. But if we compare that to a tree, for instance, a tree is more conscious than a stone, obviously, and that tree can experience happiness or distress a little bit more than a stone. If we go then to an animal, if we go then to a human being can experience happiness, even though it may be temporary, at a different kind of level than an animal or a plant or certainly a stone. So these different types of level lead us to understanding and asking the question, what then is real happiness? Well, that's answered in the verse we put on the board here today. Real happiness is a joyous state called samadhi, where one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys through transcendental senses. This is what real happiness is, boundless transcendental happiness. Boundless means that it's not temporary, as Kosrupa and Mahananda were explaining to us. Those alternatives are not there. It's eternal. It's not bounded with a beginning and an end. It's our natural state of being. And it's transcendental. Transcendental means that it's not part of this material world that we're in. It's happiness beyond the realm that we live in on an ordinary basis. And we find through the lives of great sages and philosophers that that realm can be approached through meditation, by going within, and searching out in our heart our real nature. This transcendental happiness can awaken. So all those things we talked about in the beginning, money, drugs, material facility, fancy cars, women or men, all these things are on the material platform, and they can't give us happiness, at least they can't give us more than temporary happiness, which we can discount as being happiness at all. But there's another realm that has boundless transcendental happiness, and we can approach that by turning within, by understanding the basic point of spiritual life, that we're not this material body, we're actually the spirit soul within. And if we can access the spirit soul within, then we can be, we have access to this boundless transcendental happiness. Srila Prabhupada continues, Buddhi means intelligence. One has to be intelligent if he wants to enjoy. Animals do not really develop intelligence and so cannot enjoy life as a human being can. The hands, the nose, the eyes, the other sense organs, and all the bodily parts may be present on a dead man, but he cannot enjoy. Why not? The enjoying energy, the spirit spark, has left, and therefore the body has no power. If one looks further into the matter with a little intelligence, he can understand that it is not the body that was enjoying at all, but the spiritual, small spiritual spark within. The real enjoyer is the spiritual spark. So this knowledge should create a revolution in our thought, a revolution in our heart, that actually, who's the enjoyer here? Who's the enjoyer? I'm thinking that my senses are me. My hand is me. It's the enjoyer. My ear is me. It's the enjoyer. I want to hear music. I want to touch this. And that will create happiness. But that's not connected with the real and the real enjoyer. Who's the real enjoyer? The real enjoyer is the spirit soul. And so if we want happiness, real happiness, we have to go there. We have to experience on the spiritual level. And what's the characteristic of happiness on the spiritual level? It's boundless. That's what the verse read today. It's boundless spiritual happiness. So until we do that, then we're really missing the point. We don't know what real happiness is because we don't know who's enjoying. We don't know the real enjoyer. The enjoyer is the spirit soul. So now, up until this point, many different religious traditions would be in agreement about this. But particularly in Indian religious systems, where we find Bhagavad Gita, for instance, a divide comes about what happens on the spiritual, on the spiritual plane. Is it a personal nature of happiness, or is it an impersonal nature of happiness? That spirit spark, is that spirit spark just a spark of energy, or is that spirit spark a person? Bhagavad Gita teaches that the soul is a person, not imperson. And Prabhupada gives a very nice example in this regard. He says, it follows that if the spirit is enjoying, it must also have senses. Otherwise, how can it enjoy? If we go back to the verse here, it said again, boundless transcendental happiness enjoyed through transcendental senses. So the enjoying, the spirit is enjoying, is sensual. It's not an impersonal experience. Prabhupada says, if they don't have senses, if the soul doesn't have senses, how can it enjoy? The spirit spark must have form, otherwise how is the material body grown to accommodate it? The conclusion is the spirit spark is not impersonal. It is actually a person. God is an actual person, and the spirit spark, being a fragmental part of him, is also a person. Prabhupada gives the example of how our clothes are made. Our clothes are made to fit the body. We have a couple of arm openings, a neck opening, or whatever. We because that fits the body. Similarly, we look around and we see so many bodies in this material world. These are coverings. And what's the form of the covering? The form of the covering covers the body, just like we have senses, hands, feet, eyes, nose, ears, all these things. So the covering fits the person. The covering fits the soul. So he's explaining like this so we understand that the soul is a person. The soul has form. And that real enjoyment or happiness comes when the spirit spark person develops a relationship with the eternal supreme person, the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. So Bhagavad Gita teaches this science of the relationship of the soul to the super soul. The individual living entity with the supreme living entity. And that is the basis of happiness. It's boundless, it's eternal. It involves a sense exchange in such a way that Prabhupada amazingly calls it, in this introductory book, he amazingly calls it Rasa Leela. Prabhupada says here, that pleasure is ananta, endless. How is this? The spirit soul is eternal and the Supreme Lord is eternal. Therefore, reciprocation of their loving exchanges is eternal. One who is actually intelligent will refrain from the flickering sense enjoyment of this material body and fix his enjoyment in spiritual life. His participation in spiritual life with the Supreme Lord is called Rasa Leela. So, Prabhupada here is speaking in broad general terms, letting us know that if we strive for happiness on the spiritual plane, we can have an eternal loving relationship with the Supreme Lord. And what would that look like? What would that look like, an eternal loving relationship with the Supreme Lord? I'll give you a hint. It happened here at the temple earlier today. What would it look like? It would look like the holy festival. If we read how Krishna enjoys with those living entities who are there with him, experiencing boundless happiness, what are they doing? They're doing things like playing holy, throwing the colors on each other, singing and dancing, taking nice, delectable foods. This is a realm, and Krishna comes as an incarnation into this material world to show us what real happiness is like. It's a wonderful festival, as I said at the beginning, the fun never stops around here. And it's a wonderful festival, one after another, after another, and after another, after another. That's what spiritual life is all about. So as Prabhupada says in the Gita, we should be captivated by that information and want to go to that place where we can experience this type of life, this type of exchange with the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada quotes again from Bhagavad Gita to sort of finish this section on the way to Krishna. He says, the process for establishing oneself in real happiness, this boundless transcendental happiness we're talking about, is the process of Krishna consciousness. By Krishna consciousness, we gradually develop our real intelligence and naturally enjoy relishing spiritual happiness as we make spiritual progress. As we begin to relish spiritual happiness, we proportionately abandon material happiness. As we make progress in understanding the absolute truth, we naturally become detached from this false happiness. This false happiness. It's harsh to say, it may be harsh and people may take it that way, but please understand the purpose of the scriptures and Krishna's instruction here is to bring us to eternal happiness. And so, yes, there may be a little flickering happiness here and there, but don't get distracted by that or attached to that and give up the pursuit for eternal happiness. And Prabhupada finishes by quoting Bhagavad Gita, the next verse, 6:22. He talks about what one achieves when one reaches transcendental happiness. He says, he quotes Krishna's instruction to Arjuna, upon gaining this, the boundless transcendental happiness, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. So we have to admit this world is full of difficulty. And if we want to become steady and not disturbed by that, and indeed happy in all that, despite all that, then we need to come to this level of real happiness. So we would encourage you to do that. And it's not so hard to do, actually. Just like we said earlier today, there was a festival, singing, dancing, wonderfully exchanging with others by throwing colors. These are loving exchanges. Whatever we do, if we do it to please Krishna, we don't say give up everything and stop doing everything. We say no, just do it for Krishna. No matter where you find yourself in your life, you can do what you do, dedicated to Krishna. Try to please Krishna. And if you do that, then you'll gradually make progress to the point where this whole ocean of boundless transcendental happiness can become available to you. So this is the purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement, and why so many devotees dedicate their lives to this over decades, to give everyone the opportunity to be happy. So are there any reflections, comments, or questions that anyone has about this? Ma Ananda?
Yeah, I would like to address that idea of love that Mr. Rupa brought up. I just remembered a lecture that I listened, I think this morning or even maybe yesterday. Prabhupada was talking about how when a living entity is born, when he's an infant, he puts everything in his mouth, indicating he just loves himself. Later on, he shares with his family, he expands his love for his family. Later on, it becomes the society. His love expands. Later on after that, it's for the whole country. Later after that, it's for the international world. But Prabhupada explained how they're never satisfied, no matter where you place your love. And he always talks about even this idea of love in our language, in the Sanskrit language. There's the word for love is prema. It means love of God. The word for what we call romantic love or whatever we have in the material world, the word for that is kama, K-A-M-A. And Prabhupada explains that that we create, that with each other we create an illusion of love, and that the actual love in this material world is just affection and attachment, mostly. You know, so there is love, of course, but until we repose our love in Krishna, we'll never be satisfied.
Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Dukhalayam ashashvatam." He explains our experience in this world into these two concepts. Dukhalayam is full of miseries. So to achieve all those loving levels you describe, one has to take a lot of trouble. And so that's okay. You might say, I'll take trouble for that. And if you achieve happiness after going through all the trouble, then ashashvatam, it's temporary. So you lose it all. So that's the frustration that we're trying to save people from. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. All the trouble it takes to become happy and to wake up to the realization that you can't, it's temporary. Even if you find happiness through all the struggles, it's temporary, and then you have to, you find yourself in a lamenting place. So, thank you. Any other reflections?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Can you explain a little bit more about the transcendental senses? How it is different than the senses we realize every day? How one can achieve the transcendental senses?
Okay. Transcendental senses, how it's different than the senses we perceive every day. Well, one blunt way to explain the difference is if I have gloves on, I put on some gloves, and I try to do what I could do with my hand without a glove, then there's a lot less sensitivity there, for instance, because the glove has some, it's inhibiting the natural function of touch a little bit. It's coming in between. It's making things a little less definite. So one sense, one way to understand it is that our senses are a covering. Our material senses are a covering of our spiritual senses. With spiritual senses, we do the same thing. We see, we smell, we taste, we hear. But the subject matter of our seeing, tasting, smelling, hearing is the eternal form of Lord Sri Krishna. Whereas in the material coverings, so many other things we think that we seek out to give us pleasure turn and cause us pain or frustration. Just like you might be frustrated in trying to pick up a little pin with that glove on, whereas you could easily do it with your bare hand. The senses, they actually inhibit our really experiencing and enjoying sight, sound, touch, form. That's one way of differentiating between the blunt material senses and the refined spiritual senses. Of course, with the spiritual senses, we see and perceive the Supreme Lord. You sort of gestured towards the deities when you were asking your question. And the deity worship is a good example of the difference between spiritual senses and material senses. With material senses, we can't see spirit. And so, therefore, the Lord comes in a form supposedly made out of material elements. But they're elements that we can perceive with our senses right now. We can see the deity. We can touch the deity. With our material senses on the way to becoming purified to seeing actually the spiritual form. This is a spiritual form, no doubt. But the Lord has its form beyond the deity form, his real form, so to speak, that we see with our real purified senses. And so senses are covered and limited. Senses are uncovered and unlimited when they're spiritualized. Is that all right? Mother Richard, you had some?
If I could just feel that love for Krishna, then I would know that it was really there. But because I don't, I have a hard time surrendering or, you know, believing in that happiness. Mm. So how would you answer that?
Well, just like Krishna comes in the deity form, now the deity form is to Westerners maybe a little newer things, but just like he comes in the deity form before our eyes, materially contaminated eyes, so we can see him, we can serve him. Similarly, he comes before us in relationships so that we can experience spiritual relationships. And how do we experience spiritual relationships? With the other devotees. we have to understand that Vaishnavas, the devotees of Krishna, are very special spirit souls. They have received Krishna's mercy. And if we serve them, we interact with them. There's three ways, primary ways to interact with the devotees of the Lord. Those that are less advanced, newer on the path than us, we show mercy to them. Those that are more advanced than us, ahead on the path than us, we seek their shelter, we seek their mercy. And those that are on an equal level with us, we cultivate friendship with them. So if we interact with the devotees of the Lord and these three types of relationships, then we can actually experience Krishna. Krishna is pleased by that. Prabhupada gave the example, love me, love my dog. So when you show some affection to someone's dog, then they automatically, they show some affection to you. So the Vaishnavas are special to Krishna. And if we show affection to them, Krishna will show affection to us in our heart. We can actually experience it in our heart. Is it? Yes.
What do you mean by mercy?
Well, help, assistance, guidance. That's probably a good thing. Because sometimes we get stuck in our own language here, so yeah, maybe mercy needs to be expanded. What does it mean? That? So I appreciate that question. But help, guidance, direction, good advice, that's... Yeah, but there's also like a spiritual dimension to it where spiritually advanced persons can actually give us, through their instructions, give us a spiritual inspiration. And so spiritual inspiration is also part of it. Yes, please.
Can I add a little bit to Mataji Uchira?
Yes.
Question. I recently had a situation with a person who asked a similar question, and I tried to explain that love is not cheap, and we have to earn it. And that way, she kind of appreciated that, the relationship they come to, you have to earn something to get to that. And especially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is what was the point for her. So that was kind of like, a deep appreciation for her. And I think if you meet people on the street, and they ask that question.
Thank you, Jagadish. Yes.
Yeah, I have a question about what is it? Samadhi. I can't pronounce. Samadhi. Yes. When you reach, the way I understand it, it's like a transcendental consciousness, right? Transcendental divine consciousness. When you reach that state, Do you not come back down to like happiness and distress? Like does happiness and do you not experience happiness and distress anymore? Do you just rise in that state of consciousness? Do you just rise up and just feel, from what I understand, that blitz and knowledge, 24/7?
Yeah. Yes, the answer is that. The answer to the question is yes. And it explains in the two verses, Bhagavad Gita 6, 21 and 22, that we went over here. The first one, in that joyous state, samadhi, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. It means that one is fixed in one's consciousness. There is, as we advance in spiritual life, we become more aware. And initially, we may have fluctuations, so to speak. We may have fluctuations. But that's not real samadhi, just like it's not real happiness. Real happiness is, once achieved, one never departs from the truth. Or as the next verse said, upon gaining this, there's nothing more to be gained, and even the greatest difficulty cannot shake one from that consciousness. So true samadhi is a constant state of love for Krishna. We would say trance, but again, that's another one of those words which maybe needs to be fleshed out a bit. It's not just like some blind or stupor or something like that. It's full consciousness and of loving exchange with Krishna. That's samadhi.
So do you still like feel happiness and sadness? You still feel a state of happiness and sadness, but with the samadhi, it's like samadhi is added on. Do you just rise above whatever you feel?
Happiness and distress.
I'm trying to perceive this.
Yeah, happiness. Happiness and distress are symptoms of material consciousness. They're inherent in this material world. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that there's a duality. Everyone is born into this world filled with the duality of desire and hate, this happiness and distress, heat and cold, all these things. So if you read in Bhagavad Gita, you'll find when it describes one in knowledge, they rise above that duality. So the duality is explained, and rising above it through spiritual consciousness is the solution. And so initially there may be some states where we can hold that for some period of time, but then we fall back from it. But full consciousness, the perfection of our spiritual endeavor, brings us to a state where we're immune to the dualities in this world, happiness, distress, heat and cold, success or failure, like that. Anything else before we end? Yes?
Thank you, Prabhu. And I like the word you were talking about, turning within. You know, our senses are so pulled outside all the time, and all of the material society is always pulling at us, especially now with media, television, and advertising, and our poor children. I'm not raising children anymore, but I feel for the children today of that influence. And yet, the real gold is within, and it's internal. It's about controlling our mind and senses and chanting, you know, Krishna's present in his name. That's no ordinary thing, that Krishna's actually present in his name. So when we chant daily, hopefully we have a commitment to do that, we experience that more and more. And the other things just fall away. The interest in the other stuff just kind of goes. It's not artificial. It's like quite a natural development that comes from our applying ourselves, our intention, you know, to develop devotion by hearing and chanting on a regular basis. You know, it's not magic, but it is a system that our acharyas have given us to attain this. And it is attainable. And we can taste a little bit, and that encourages us to keep going. We taste it a little bit here and there, and then we know it's real, and we keep going.
Thank you. Let me just add something about what you said about the media and everything like that and our children today. My godbrother, Dave Amrita Swami, he travels the world and he does lectures on his book, which is Hiding an Unnatural Happiness. And he has a statistic in there, or at least a material phenomenon that's going on now, about how social media causes depression. Because you have the social media to bring people together, but when your friends are out at a restaurant or something and they send the little notice to you somehow or another what a good time they're having, you read that and you become depressed. You think, oh, gee, I wish I was there. I'm not there. So the very thing that is meant to spread happiness is social media actually is causing depression in people. And so Dukalyama Shashvatam, no, Maya Sukhaya, Prabhupada says, by advancement of material technology, we think that we'll be happy. We think happiness will be found in that way. But actually, it's just the opposite. It causes misery.
One more thing, Prabhu. And it's not that we have to give up like we're good at something, let's use it for Krishna's service. Whatever our talents, whatever gifts we have, we can use those in Krishna's service and be so fulfilled and also bring it to the world. You know, we have rappers who are rapping for Krishna. We have so many different ways to serve and using our own gifts. So if we discover what those are artistically, or I work with people, you know, make Krishna the center and then do whatever we have. Make that an offering to Krishna, as you were saying, Prabhu.
Okay, I think it's a beautiful way to end, and it's 6 o'clock, and now we can go fight the rain to get Krishna Shadam. Hare Krishna.